This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. The new film, We Were Soldiers, is based on the 1992 bestseller We Were Soldiers Once and Young, Ia Drang, The Battle That Changed the War in Vietnam, by General Harold Moore and Joseph Galloway. Ia Drang was the first major land battle the Americans fought in Vietnam. It was also the bloodiest. Both sides claim victory. Both sides suffered tremendous losses. General Moore, who's played in the film by Mel Gibson, led the campaign. Joseph Galloway, who was a 23-year-old reporter at the time, covered the battle for UPI. General Moore led 450 men of the 1st Battalion, 7th Cavalry, into the Ia Drang Valley. They never expected to be surrounded by 2,000 North Vietnamese soldiers. Reinforcements came from both sides. The battle ended with 230 Americans dead, 240 wounded, and 3,000 North Vietnamese dead. Terry Gross spoke to Harold Moore and Joseph Galloway in November of 1992 on the 27th anniversary of the battle. General Moore told Terry that the worst-case scenario happened early on in the battle when one of his platoons was cut off from the rest of the battalion.
That happened because we had a very aggressive lieutenant who was ordered to go up to the rest of the company through this scrub jungle and get on their flank and give them mutual support. In other words, tie in with them on their right flank. This lieutenant and his platoon encountered 3 to 4 North Vietnamese as they got to the rest of their company, and he ordered his men to take off after them, which they did. They got out 300 yards away from the rest of the company, away from everyone else, and were cut off, surrounded and cut off from the rest of the battalion.
What's your responsibility when that happens?
Quite simple. My responsibility was to try to get them back and get to them and keep them from being overrun. As it turned out, the platoon leader was killed within minutes. The next in command, the platoon sergeant, was killed. And command came down to a buck sergeant, 3 stripes, who took command of the platoon. And he formed them into a perimeter, brought in fire support, artillery and air, and we held this enemy off as we tried to attack to get to them. It took us over 24 hours to get to them. But when we got to them and rescued them, they still had ammunition with which to fight.
General, you weren't prepared for the size of the Vietnamese force that you faced. What were you prepared to find, and how many men were actually there against you?
Okay. About 10 minutes before we took off for the Ia Drang Valley in the initial assault, I received information that there were 3 battalions of enemy, and a battalion of North Vietnamese is around 500 men, that there were 3 battalions of the enemy within 2 miles of our landing zone. And so I sifted this through my head and immediately realized that we could be into a fight almost immediately upon landing, and which indeed we were. Within 45 minutes, we were in the first major battle of the war between a large American force and North Vietnamese forces. I say large because eventually I got 3 or 4 hours later the rest of my battalion on the ground, but at first we only had 80 to 100. And it was a very, very sporty occasion, let me assure you.
Joe Galloway, I'm going to ask you to describe what it was like to be on the ground in the middle of a battle in which there was rocket fire, bombs, cannons, ground artillery.
This was shocking. This was overwhelming noise. You couldn't hear yourself think. The second morning, the enemy launched a major attack on the southeast side of this little football-sized clearing. And all of a sudden, this thunderous attack erupts, and we're right behind the company that's being hit. And the machine gun fire and the rifle fire and the rocket grenades of the enemy that pass through that company are landing on us. Men next to me fell over with a bullet in the head. I was lying down as close to the ground as I could get. Seemed like the right thing to do. When I felt a the toe of a combat boot in my ribs, and I sort of turned my head and tilted up and looked, and it was the battalion sergeant major, a man 6'3" tall, a big bear of a guy. And he bent over at the waist and sort of yelled down at me so I could just hear him. And what he said shocked me. He said, "Sonny, you can't take no pictures laying down there on the ground." And I thought about that for a minute, and I realized he's right. I can't do my job down here. And the other thing that crossed my mind is I think we're probably all going to be killed, and if that's the case, I'd just as soon take mine standing up anyway. So I got up and went about my business.
What did you shoot?
I was carrying a Nikon camera and an M16 rifle, and on occasion I used them both.
Did your pictures turn out from the battle?
The pictures were... For somebody who was as scared as I was, they weren't too bad.
General, when bombs are falling and there's artillery fire all around and you're under attack, this is the question of somebody who's never served or been in battle. But how do you think clearly? I mean, this is the time when you are most required to think clearly, but when it must be most difficult to do so.
I really have never had any problem. Thinking clearly in a tough, time-critical situation, I think I kind of go into a sort of a C-zone and blank out all the horrible brutality which is going on around me, being aware of it nevertheless, but realizing that I was a commander, I am a commander, and I am responsible for preserving as many American lives as I can and killing as many enemies as I can. Now, in the smoke and the dust, which limits visibility, and the terrible heat, that compounds the situation. The men screaming and yelling, giving orders in three languages, English, Spanish, Vietnamese, wounded men screaming for medics and for their mother about to die. I've never found it difficult to keep my head in situations like that. I'm a paratrooper. I've had a couple of malfunctions. Once I was 8 seconds from hitting the ground, but I knew I'd make it in on my reserve if I could get it open. So I've never really been concerned when I've been in a tough situation. Just do the job.
I guess you can't allow yourself to get too emotional about your men dying in the middle of a fight.
No, you cannot. And furthermore, you cannot impart by your very manner and your voice on the radio any possible sign or word or tone of voice that would indicate to any listener or any of your men looking at you that you were rattled. You had to look cool and be cool, and it's something you can't put on.
What about when the battle's over and you don't have to be cool and you don't have to be unemotional? Does it get you in a different way then?
Yep, that's when it's always hit me. In this battle, I looked around on the ground and saw many of my precious men in their ponchos lying dead. Men whom I have trained for 18 months, knew their wives, children, many of them, knew them very closely. And I knew a terrible truth that 24 hours later would shatter the hearts of their families back home in America. And that got to me. Darn right it did. And I never a day goes by in the 27 years since that battle that I don't refight it in my mind and think about those great Americans who never backed off, many of them who had only 7 to 10 days left in the service. And they went home in coffins. And I'm forever grateful for their service, and I grieve for them forever. And for years I felt guilty that I was not killed. I guess that's a normal reaction. from a commander who loves his men.
You don't feel that way anymore?
I've kind of gotten over it a little bit. A few years back, several of my troopers told me at one of these reunions, they said, Colonel, and they still call me Colonel, which is fine. Colonel, you got to stop feeling that way, because if you died in that place, none of us would have got out of there. Well, I don't know if that's true or false, but that made me feel better.
Lieutenant General Harold Moore and Joseph Galloway, co-authors of the book We Were Soldiers Once and Young. The book has been adapted into the new film We Were Soldiers, starring Mel Gibson. We'll hear more of Terry Gross's 1992 interview with them after the break. This is Fresh Air. Now back to Terry Gross's interview with Lieutenant General Harold Moore and journalist Joseph Galloway. Their book, We Were Soldiers Once and Young, is the basis for the new film We Were Soldiers, starring Mel Gibson.
Now, this battle lasted 4 days and four nights. Did you get any sleep at all, either of you, during the length of the battle?
I didn't get any sleep. Along about the early morning of the third day, my mind was still functioning clearly and cleanly and quickly. Do that on adrenaline or just on training and stamina. But the curious thing that happened was that I had to think every word before I would say it into the radio or to people around me. It was like translating English into English, if you can understand what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Joe, did you get any sleep, and were you functioning well?
Well, I was functioning. Sleep sort of leaves your mind. When I'd gone out to that tea plantation, I'd been on the perimeter with one of Colonel Moore's, his Bravo company. And that was foxholes and alarms all night and 100% alert, so I got no sleep that night, and I got no sleep the next night. And I think it was on the last night we were in there, somewhere about 2 o'clock in the morning, it kind of caught up with me, and I remember leaning back against a tree, and the last thing I remember for about an hour and a half until the shooting started again was I remember that same fellow who booted me up onto my feet in the middle of the firestorm. I remember him kneeling down, the sergeant major, and putting a poncho liner over me and tucking me in like I was his son or his grandchild. And I thought, what a tender gesture from such a tough man. And I did. I just conked out. I slept for a couple of hours. I was awakened by the renewed fighting and came up out of the poncho liner and went back to work. Some of that work, I would say, you're not so much a news person in those circumstances as you are of another set of hands.
Mm-hmm.
You can be of use. You can carry the wounded. You can bring water. You can carry ammunition.
Did you carry the wounded?
I did. The one memory that will never leave my mind is what they call a friendly fire incident that occurred on the second day. And we were around the command post, and someone said, "My God, look." And I looked up, and there were two canisters of napalm that had just been released by a U.S. Air Force F-100 jet, and they were coming directly at us. And there was his wingman was behind him and alongside, and if the first set of napalm cans didn't get us, the second were surely going to, and I can remember Colonel Moore screaming, "Get him to pull up, pull up, pull up!" And the Charlie Hastings, the Air Force forward controller, on the radio screaming at that pilot. The damage was done with the first two, but we could maybe stop the second plane from dropping his, and Charlie managed to do that. But the other two, just like slow motion, coming down at us. The officer next to me, he knew something I didn't know, that if you are caught in napalm, the one thing you need to do is protect your eyes. And he turned and he put his face into my shoulder and protected his eyes while I just watched them come. and they went just directly over our heads. And they struck in the middle of a couple of small foxholes where our engineer detachment were dug in the grass, and the napalm engulfed them, and we could see them dancing in the fire. And as soon as that napalm died down and we could run out into that smoldering grass, we did. And a man loomed up in the smoke, and he said, "Get this man by his feet." And I reached, and I caught his ankles, and when I did, the nylon of the combat boots crumbled in my hands, and the flesh came off, and I could feel the bones of his ankles in the palms of my hands. And you never ever forget something like that. Those men lay for an hour or so in our little makeshift aid station right beside us, screaming in pain in spite of all the morphine in the world. This affects you. You're no longer you can't be a detached observer in those circumstances. These are people who are giving their lives to save yours.
I'd like to ask you both if during the battle, when you probably thought there was a good chance you would die, if you made any bargains with God or made any promises about what you would do if you did live.
I did not. I was very young at the time, just turned 24. I had thought about this myself, and I thought, this is a possibility. But I'd have no wife, I have no children. This is my life I'm risking, and it would cause some pain to my mother and father, but it's worth the risk. Now, I went to war again when I was 49 years old, and I rode with the tanks of the 24th Infantry Division into the Euphrates River Valley in a deep in Iraq. And that was different. I'm married. I have two young sons, 12 and 15. And all the way across that desert, I thought about them. And I thought about, once again, the young men who were riding with me. And I did do some talking to God on that ride. And what I said was, "God, don't send me back into another Iadrang Valley. I've been there, and these kids don't need to see that."
General, let me ask you if you ever made any bargains with God when you were thinking that this might be the end.
No. You got to remember now that I was a West Point graduate, professional Army officer, trained in all the Army schools. I'd been through battle in the Korean War as an infantry company commander of two infantry companies. And I'd seen battle before. And in that war and in the Vietnam War, I never did any bargaining with God. I never thought about my wife and five kids back in America. The thing I thought about was my troopers on the ground and accomplishing my mission. And I never gave a thought in any fight I've ever been in two wars, whether or not I'd get hit. If I got hit, I got hit. That's it. My job was to lead troops. And to lead them, you got to be on the battlefield, and you cannot be fearful. You got to keep your cool. And I never knelt down. It never crossed my mind that we would go down in that fight against great odds. I knew in my heart that we would prevail. We had massive fire support. We had disciplined troops. And we were tough. And we were good. And it never entered my mind to make a personal bargain with God for me or for my men. I knew we'd win. I lost 79 killed, 121 men wounded, including my attached units. And that's a terrible price to pay, but he did not kill us all, as he obviously intended to do.
Do you, either of you, do anything special on the anniversary of the battle every year?
Oh, you bet. All of the people that we have interviewed in this book, all our friends, our brothers, our comrades, as many of them as possible, come here to Washington, and we have a reunion, we have a dinner, we go together to the wall, the names of those who fell in the battles in the Iadrang, 305 of them, are engraved on one single granite panel, the third one to the right of the apex of the Vietnam Memorial. We're older, and some of us are beat up and got gimpy legs, and some of them don't have arms, and some of them are half blind. But we come, and we go say something in our hearts to those we left behind.
And let me tell you, it's a pretty heavy, very profound experience to do so when you see those names on that wall that you knew so well when they were in the prime of their youth, soldiers once and young. And it's tough, but it's also healing. And it's good to be there.
I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Joseph Galloway and Lieutenant General Harold Moore, they co-wrote the bestseller We Were Soldiers Once and Young, Iadrang, the Battle That Changed the War in Vietnam. The book is out in paperback. Terry Gross spoke with Moore and Galloway in November 1992 on the 27th anniversary of the battle. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.